welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
So, what do you have for us, Bill?
Well, Aaron, we have a sponsor this hour. Is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And right now, they've got a full stock of tractors, mowers, Z-mowers, attachments, you name it. Go up and see them. Anything John Deere, they can take care of the problem. And they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Give them a call.
The budding metropolis of Shasta Lake?
Budding metropolis, mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. And their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at, is it the web or is it the interweb? that's the new thing. Yeah, they're on the interweb at papemachinery.com. I want to keep up with the times and all that. I don't want to seem like I'm old or anything. I know all the new stuff.
Literally like a captive here.
What are you doing? You tighten yourself up?
I don't know. I got cords all over the place.
Cords all over the place.
All right. So we thought we'd depart from the stupid bowl today and talk about prison.
Hey, that's enough of that. I watched a halftime show.
As long as you're not in it, we're good. Thought we would take a little break. I have actually, in full disclosure,
isn't it the Giants and the Knicks? Who's playing anyway?
Warriors.
Sure. The Warriors, that's right.
Yeah, Warriors. Yeah. I have spoken with these guys about this a little bit. I've never met Lanny, but I've met Josh. And Bill knows nothing about this, so it's kind of fun. We're in different educational places, and I guarantee you the public doesn't know anything about what's going on.
I drove by a prison one time. That's about as close as I've ever been to a prison.
That's actually a good thing.
Yeah. I want to keep it that way.
I checked that years ago just to make sure.
Yeah, oh, you did.
Yeah, that you'd only driven by.
You checked
your
resume, huh?
Make sure he's only driven by. So these guys are up at the Federal Correction Institution at Herlong, California. It's outside of Susanville and far northern California for people who are listening out of the state. But this issue is not just at this prison. This is a Bureau of Prisons issue. And so I'm sure we'll have lots of acronyms and we'll try not to speak, try to make sure that none of this is in code. But both these guys have a lot of experience. Josh is from Northern California. He spent 6 years in the Air Force after high school, and then he joined the Bureau of Prisons in 2010. He's a current union vice president at FCI Herlong. Lanny Carey, he's from the San Joaquin Valley, and he spent 4 years in the Marine Corps. So before we get carried away on prison, thank you both for your service. That is awesome. And he joined the Bureau of Prisons back in 2001. So, and he's been at a couple of different ones. I don't know if he'll have any need to tell us about that, but I figure they'll tell us what they want us to know. Just for easy math, this will exhaust all my information about Herlong, but there are 1,500, it says, anyway, according to Wikipedia. It's male offenders, medium security, 1,513 inmates with 1,400 and some at the actual facility and 68 at the camp. So my question always is, what is medium security? Like, what's the worst thing at medium security? So who are you dealing with before we get too far down the trail? Hi, fellas.
Me? Medium security is, in the Bureau of Prisons, they use different means to, based on age, based on the offense, criminal history, to calculate out a number that determines their security level. So the medium is, just kind of sets the security parameters of the facility, the requirements. That's where we are. We're just right in the middle. They have USPs, ADMACs, and then low securities, obviously, and each one just requires a different set of security parameters.
But inmates can work their way down from a high to a medium, which we have a lot of those inmates at our facility.
But didn't they already commit the crime? Like, how do you work?
Yeah, by the point system that the Bureau of Prison uses, they've worked their way down to mediums.
So if they committed, what would be considered a
what's like a bad medium security?
Yeah, well, like high security. What would they have to do to end up in your place if they were high security reduced to medium?
So when they reduce, there's a lot of ways they reduce. So just by being in prison for multiple years, when your age, as you age, your point system goes down. The agency also does management variables, which if you haven't had any kind of disciplinary history while in prison, they'll actually management variable you down to a lower security level.
Hmm. And what types of federal crimes are we talking about?
Everything. Yes.
I think a big misconception about federal prison is these are white-collar crimes. However, you have murderers and drug dealers inside of the institution. You have sex offenders inside of our institution.
Wow.
I had asked somebody once about, like, what was the worst medium security thing they could think of in your kind of prison, and I was told somebody who killed their family and chopped them up in pieces.
That's plausible.
And I'm thinking, that's really not medium in my book. You should be in a place no one ever sees you again. That's not a medium security deal. So your bottom line is, you're not dealing with people who wrote bad checks to the IRS. I think that's important to...
And we have everything in between that that range also. We do have people that were here for getting DUIs on federal grounds. Something as simple as that, all the way up to, you know, the heinous crimes you were just talking about.
Yeah, I was on a jury one time. A guy had been picked up drunk driving on a military base, and he was in big trouble. That was federal, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we get everything from that on up to the little pieces you were just talking about.
Yeah.
That's accurate of the camp also. There's just it's not just white-collar criminals at the camp. You have drug smugglers and things of that nature.
And the camp for I mean, I just always assume, because really, why would people know that much about prison? So what is the camp, when you say you guys have a camp, just tell people what that means. I mean, most people get the idea of prison because you see that in a movie, but what's camp?
So the camp is a minimum security camp, and there's no fences, and the inmates are used to do tasks around the institution. They have institutional jobs that they do, but they are minimum security inmates.
Wow. And do they go back to the prison at night? Is the camp a daytime thing?
The camp is all the time. They stay at the camp.
Oh.
It's an adjacent building.
Okay. Seems like camp would be better than being at prison if you're an inmate.
They have a lot more freedom, and occasionally they have outside projects in the community that the campers will go and participate in.
And these are different than the guys who used to be our fire crews, right? Or maybe not.
Yes, they're different because we're federal.
Okay.
Yeah, the fire camps are...
They're state.
They're state, yeah.
But you guys don't pitch in on that? That's not part of this crossover?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. So,
we have done projects out in the communities. They've helped restore the local school system out here. They've helped in other areas throughout the community. They've helped out at the local landfill. Any project that the community has, they can apply through the institution by contacting the warden's office and requesting an outside detail to go and do that. And whatever the project length time is, they'll find inmates that have the proper security level and the custody level, and then they can assign them out there. They come, you know, by day, go out there, do the projects, help the community out, come back.
You know, you don't hear very often of folks that jump the program and escape. Does that just not happen very often up in your area?
It does on occasion. We have had a few here.
Okay.
But, you know, I think, like we talked about, there's much more freedom here, so I don't think any of them want to spoil that too much, and, you know, because once they get caught, which they will, they'll end up you know, in a higher security facility.
Right, right. Yeah, don't mess up a good thing. But, you know, they're not the sharpest knives in the
but
drawer.
But we're talking about criminals, who got caught.
Yeah.
So the upshot of today really is not from the prisoner side. It's from the guard side. That was my real interest in this topic is I don't think people realize you wouldn't think that guarding federal prisoners would be a thing you would starve for resources. You'd think, hey, you know, that's an important thing. We need to keep these people off the street. I mean, we have so few people going to prison anyway. You know, if these guys are deemed bad enough to be in prison, you'd think you'd want to, you know, take care of the people who look out after them. And that's, so I guess that's kind of our launching pad there. I don't know where you guys want to start with that, but there are some real issues in the Bureau of Prisons with staffing and shortages and resources and all that stuff.
Right. So around 2016, they actually did a staffing reduction, and then we had hiring freezes along the way there. And our institution in particular, we had buildings shut down. Our staffing authorization was lowered. Since then, obviously, the things that are happening at the border, the political climate's changed. And they opened buildings back up without ever getting the reauthorization for the correct positions that are mandated by the Bureau of Prisons' actual policy. And so if you use that mathematical calculation that's in their policy, we should be at 161 correctional officers, and we're floating right about 50% of that.
Wow. So there's a real safety issue, if nothing else.
It's stretching the officers out fairly thin, but it's also affecting other areas of the institution. Part of, you know, incarceration is rehabilitation and getting inmates to go to programming and educational classes, recreational things, to become, you know, more functional in society when they do get out, when they are released, and those staff are being taken away. So a lot of the programming, if it is still running, it's ran with, you know, half to a third of the staff that it should be ran with. The classes aren't running fully like they should be. It takes a lot of the whole institution kind of pulling into one to even keep it running. Mm. Those are the things that we've been trying to do, is reach out to different congressional leaders, maybe get some action taken to help with hiring, to help keep up with the economy changes that we've been faced with.
All right. And what types of programs can they enlist in when they're in there and they're qualified and all that? What is offered for the inmates?
Almost anything that you could imagine at a local community college. They do courses through local community colleges. They do skills building. They do welding. They've done
the GED course.
GED courses.
We have a truck driving course.
Wow.
There's one for construction, building, learning how to build and frame out houses and those kind of projects, so that they're leaving with a skill.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny, on the outside, the trades are really hungry for those types of workers. It doesn't seem like a lot of the younger folks are signing up for that type of training. So I would imagine when these guys get out, there's probably jobs available for them.
Right, and it's not helping them just as much as it's not helping us by pulling the staff members that are supposed to be there. You know, providing that education to them, providing that skill set, they're being pulled to go fill in as a correctional officer for, you know, half or more of their work time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no kidding. Well, we've got to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I know that there are, I realize this is one of those topics that has a lot of detail, but I think that if you guys are good with it, you know, kind of mentioning some of the classification of how your, because I was surprised about that. I was thinking prison guards were prison guards, the librarian was librarian, the cafeteria people were the cafeteria people, and I was surprised to learn that, that a lot of that is being kind of morphed all into one thing to make it look like the coverage is good, when in reality, not so much.
Right.
So let's come back with that. Our guests, Josh and Lanny, hang on for us up there. And I don't know if you're in Susanville, but you're near Susanville. So anyway, thanks for sticking on with us. We're talking about prison. And you can find us at
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
A little closer indeed to prison. So talk to us about some of your staffing stuff, if the timing is good for that.
Yeah, so you touched on it right before the break there. You were talking about kind of counting everybody into the numbers that they use. And they do that. All Bureau of Prisons employees receive the same initial training when they go to Glencoe, Georgia. And after that, you kind of step into your own individual skill sets. So they use everybody's a correctional officer first, kind of phrasing. When you're an actual correctional officer on the floor, you're in a housing unit alone in a medium security prison. So you have, on average, 1 to 120, I believe, is about the average right now. One staff member to 120 inmates.
Nice.
Which the capacity for the housing units is 128. So,
wow.
So in a housing unit, you've got one guard and everyone else is a prisoner, and that's it?
That's correct. One correctional officer to 120 average inmates.
Let's not put too fine a point on that. That
no,
doesn't
that
sound...
Doesn't sound that doesn't, safe to me.
It doesn't sound healthy.
No.
Yeah. So if something happens...
So outside of that, you have your, like, unit team employees,
right.
And then you have your neighbor officer who's next door. The buildings, the way they are, they're essentially, you know, anywhere between 1 to 2 security doors separating you and them. So there are staff that aren't excessively far away, say.
Okay.
But there are other ones that are across the compound, which are... You know, going to have to take a sprint to get there during actual incidents.
So, like other things that you guys take kind of take for granted that we wouldn't know is, okay, 120 people, are the 128 people in the unit, are they all locked in little rooms, or are they all wandering around?
No, so during the programming hours, when we come in, your day watch example, they come in, they unlock the housing units, and... The MA population is out for the day at that point.
Oh, terrific.
You know, barring any lockdowns. But they're out. They go to education. They go to food service, their meals. They go to their welding classes if they're open. They go to recreation if it's open. Ideally, the idea is to keep inmates employed, doing jobs throughout the institution, and to get them educated in skill sets so that will be beneficial when they release.
So are they when you say they open up and unlock, do these inmates are they assigned to go to a certain spot? I mean, or are they free to just roam around?
Is it like TV where they're all sitting there at the little picnic table things, you know, that are hooked to the floor.
Are they required to check in when they're out?
So they are. There's the housing unit's like a big open flat, essentially. And they have their computers where they can contact their families through by email. They have telephones out there that they can use. We have controlled movements in which we'll open up movement to go from one area to another area within the facility. So we'll open up a movement like for the morning meals, and all inmates from the housing unit that want to go eat breakfast, they'll leave during their time period, go eat, and then they come back. The ones that are assigned to work details, they'll go out on those same controlled moves, and they'll go to their, whether it's facilities or if they work in education as a tutor or just an assistant, they'll go to those duties, and then they'll return when that job or task is completed.
Right. So what do they do when they get out? Do they go to like a job board and look for their name and see where they're supposed to go? How's that work?
No, they actually try to set it up semi-realistic to the real world outside, where they bring an application to a detail supervisor. So if I'm the plumbing supervisor, and they may have plumbing skills or he's interested in learning them, he brings a resume and a request to work to that staff member, and then they'll sit down with that inmate, look at the skills, if they have an opening available for them to come to work, and then they get assigned, and that's their work detail.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, do they get compensation for the time they're working, or is that just part of their program?
Yes, they do. It's all it's a multi-graded system. I believe there's four grades, and depending on skill sets and time that they've been doing it, the grades change.
Mm-hmm.
So, at any given time, I'm back to the numbers again. There's one of you and 128 people basically moving around. Because I've been to Pelican Bay, been to the shoe over at Pelican Bay, but anybody who's out of their cell has, I don't know, I might be exaggerating, but it felt like five guards, like two, three, five, I mean, a lot. And so when I was there, like, we stood against the wall and then they went by. There was no, like, everybody roaming around. There was no open movement like that.
Right. So Pelican Bay, I believe, is one of California's maximum security facilities. So that's why you'd see the increased correctional officers with each individual inmate. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, they'll be in the housing unit with one officer. They go out to recreation, and out in recreation with our population around 1,500, potentially you could be up to like 750 inmates out there with one, maybe two recreational correctional staff out there.
What?
Wow. So what happens if a fight breaks out or, you know, there's some problem? I mean, you got two guys out there that are supposed to remedy the situation?
Well, typically you would have additional staff throughout the institution that would be able to respond to the incident. So you would have the extra unit team people, the extra educational staff, the front office staff. When we're pulling those staff and putting them into correctional officers, you diminish the responding staff.
Sure.
Significantly. And we've had incidents where people are responding and they're looking up and they're, where is everybody? That is everybody.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, something breaks out and the help shows up and it's the cook. I mean, it just doesn't sound like a...
It sounds dangerous.
It does sound very dangerous.
It just sounds dangerous. I mean, just all day long.
Anything
for you guys.
Happen.
Well, it's like so when you're talking about the cooks, they're law enforcement, correctional officer, first employees also. And then they have their own work details. So if there is an incident, food service is securing their doors, you know, and they're...
Oh, that's true. I mean, they can't just run away.
Own, so, yeah. Right. So they're actually having to take care and secure and try to limit anything from happening in their area.
Yeah.
So, Lanny, you've been at this a long time, probably like almost twice as long maybe as Josh. So you guys have an interesting kind of a perspective. Time, you know, over time, has it always been that way? Like, has it always been that way, Josh, in the time you've been there, and Lanny, is it different now than it was when you started? Like, what's the continuum on this thing?
It's continued to change since the time I came in. It's much different now than it was back in 2001.
Well, you had mentioned earlier, one of you mentioned that the political atmosphere has changed. What do you mean by that?
I could tell you this. In December of 2018, President Trump signed the First Step Act law. Basically, it allows the prison staff to assess inmates in 13 categories identified. Those 13 categories are anger, antisocial, cognitions, dyslexia, education, family, finance, medical, mental health, recreation, substance abuse, trauma, and work. So those categories require staff to teach classes in those categories. So inmates, prior to that, they get 54 days a year for good conduct time. This program, or this law that President Trump signed in, basically allows inmates to gain up to 15 days a month for credit.
And so that's reducing their sentence 15 days?
Or up to 15 days a month.
Okay.
So you got inmates serving less than 50% of the time. And so as soon as an inmate has a shorter sentence, as soon as he gets there, he's basically already getting released to the public.
Yikes.
So those categories are not even really being met. You know, the basically releasing inmates that don't have the skills that the law was intended to give them.
Which explains why they're
staff members
right back.
Right. And we don't have the staff members available because they're filling in correctional officer spots instead of being able to teach these classes and being able to actually go through correctly and assess the inmates, you know, at what stage they're at, what actual needs they have. They're not here long enough, and we're short-staffed, so we're not able to actually fulfill the requirements in whole.
And basically, because the Bureau of Prisons didn't implement the things needed for this law, you have inmates getting released right now that never even programmed in those categories, yet they're just giving them a time as if they did participate in those categories.
Oh. Well, how does...
Yeah, how's that work?
Yeah, what's up with that?
That's written into the law that they get credit even if they don't participate?
No, that's the Bureau of Prisons. That's what they've done.
Oh. Wow.
So this is my personal opinion, I think in the next few years, I think you will see an influx of crimes.
Well, yeah,
We were at a meeting at the regional office for the Bureau of Prisons, and we were talking to the Correctional Programs Administrator, and he was talking about how successful sending inmates on home confinement was. And I said, "Is anybody checking on these guys?" And he goes, "No." I said, "That's why it's successful. That's why these guys are not violating their conditions of supervision."
Yeah, because nobody knows.
They're not checking on them.
Yeah, nobody checks on them. Nobody knows, and it looks like they're doing fine. Yeah, you know, I'm all for rehabilitation. I really think it's important that when they get out, they have a skill. They can participate in a trade and make money, and you know, get back on track. But if they're just releasing them,
but that's
on
not
a point
their goal.
System,
yeah.
and they aren't getting the skills they need to. Not return to a life of crime. That I agree. I think we're going to see a huge rise in the crime rate. Have they? What's their view on that?
That's a question you'd have to ask
the mysterious gods at the Bureau of Prisons.
Wow. When we were talking about earlier in the staffing, we were talking about one of our buildings were closed down. That building was actually closed down due to a failing roof structure in which water was leaking into the building, the main housing area. And we have that same condition going on now in other buildings where we're actually providing inmates with trash bags and tape where they're putting it on the walls to divert water through their cells, their living quarters, over to the drain. And
well, that sounds
the exact
fancy.
Same reason the building, the other building was shut down previously, but this time they won't shut anything down, which would bring us back to our correct staffing level, by the way. And we're being told that that's because the Bureau of Prisons, after the closing of the private prison facilities, is approximately, last time we were given a number, was approximately 7,000 inmates over physical capacity. So essentially anything that has a roof, a bed, is going to get an inmate.
Mm. Wow.
So is that because they aren't making those repairs because they don't have contractors to come in and do it, or they don't have a budget to do it? Why are they not making the repairs?
It's probably both. With the budget that wasn't passed for however long that was, funding was going on a continuing resolution, so it was kind of month by month. And those are big projects. They actually have to put them out for bidding by federal law. So those projects do take time, but it's a matter of the overpopulation due to the closing of the private prisons. There's nowhere to put these guys.
Sure.
So we're running at full capacity while we're running at, you know, half staff. It's not a good environment. It's not conducive to working conditions, and it's not conducive to the inmates being rehabilitated and coming back out.
No, that's just that's a crazy recipe for disaster. Let's take a really quick break.
Burnout.
Oh, I can't even imagine the staff burnout. When we come back, let's stay on that, because honestly, that's the part that I guarantee you the public doesn't know. I mean, these people go to prison, everybody's mad they get out too early, that they're not getting rolled up for the crimes they commit and all that. But I think out of sight, out of mind is where you guys are unfortunately being shelved in that little space there that we don't know anything about. We'll come back and chat with you some more about that. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Was nice, the party was bumping.
Hey,
and everybody having a ball.
Ha, ha.
Until the fellas started in calling.
V-I-O.
And the girls respond to the call. Ha, ha, I had a boom and shout
out. Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I'm so tired of losing. I got nothing to do at all.
Turned out much of my misspent youth was listening to songs that would have been terrific for a show about prison. Who knew?
Yeah, who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, this is just so crazy, you guys. All right, so go back onto this staffing thing and you know, let's keep focus there. You've got people that are being classified at, you're all classified as, oh, I used to know this, you told me once before, you're all classified as correctional officers, is that correct? Is that right?
We're all federal law enforcement correctional workers.
Correctional work. But there used to be a distinction between the people who were actually, like, the librarian, the cook, and the people who were guards in the units or the pods or whatever they're called, right?
Well, the Bureau of Prisons took a different approach than what most people are used to in state and other even county facilities, where in those facilities, in those systems, the correctional officer is the law enforcement officer, and he's the one that's there to respond and react to incidents within the facility. The Bureau of Prisons, they've kind of taken the backwards approach to that, and they've made everybody the law enforcement correctional worker, they call it, and then you have duties on top of that. So that's how they get away, and they say that their numbers are, you know, X to every 15 inmates. So if you go by that number, our staffing ratio to inmates looks much better on paper than it actually is, because those staff are doing their own things, have their own skill sets and specialities that they're doing, whereas the officers are the ones in the housing unit, you know, with the 128 inmates.
Yeah, on paper it makes sense. You know, everybody should be qualified to do the actual supervisorial type stuff, but
that isn't how that.
But when you give them all these other responsibilities that are primary, they're really not available.
But that would be no different than a school. That would be no different than in an elementary school.
Sure.
Where you have the custodian and the library people and the office staff, and everybody's classified as a teacher, so your student-teacher ratio is really low, but they're not all in the classroom. I mean, this doesn't work anywhere that I could think of.
No. Let me ask you this. Is there, obviously there's a shortage, are they hiring for these positions, or is there no budget to increase the
so staff? The entire Bureau of Prisons, not just FCI Herlong, is actively hiring. The problem that we're running into is the federal system is slow. You have to go through USA Jobs, which runs through the government, and then it runs through central office before it gets back down to the individual institution. And then on top of that, just the economy. And in our area alone, you have individuals that can make $5, $6 more an hour starting off at jobs that aren't law enforcement, that aren't being mandatorily held for overtime day in and day out, mm-hmm. where you get to that point of why would anybody come into this where they're going to make, you know, $6 less an hour. And then you take our location geographically, we're about an hour from Reno, or about an hour from Susanville, 45 minutes from Susanville. So it's, you have that commute on top of your day where you know that you're working 12-hour shifts right now, and those 12 turn into 16 hours. Now your 16-hour day is an 18-hour day with your commute.
Oh,
you're
making
$6 every one of those hours less than you would, you know, working downtown in Reno.
Yeah.
And no one's going to, you know, you don't have 128 guys who'd like to have you in a headlock under a bench.
Right. There's nobody at the warehouse who's going to be, you got to make sure there's nobody standing behind you, you know, when you're working at the warehouse.
Yeah. Okay. That makes no sense. And this is I don't even know how I want to ask this. Why is this so, why do you, and total, I don't know, fact or opinion, either way or both, why is this so difficult to get to the forefront and fix? Because it's obviously not a recent problem.
Or do they even recognize there's a problem?
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
I think the recognition is probably the biggest factor with the agency. As I was explaining to you earlier, with our numbers here, we had an entire building closed down. They lowered our complement of staff for correctional officers that we were authorized to have. And then through the hiring freezes of previous administrations, and just over time, our numbers have dwindled down, and there's been no real step to do that. While they increased the inmate population, they opened the building back up, required more staffing to be able to house or to be able to staff that building, and we never got the staff in order to do that. So they just stretched us out then. We continue just being stretched thinner and thinner as we go along. Then the economy is coming up. for whatever reasons. So outside corporations are, they're able to compensate to get workers in, and the federal system is so slow to react to anything that we're just not able to. We're essentially not able to compete at all. The federal correctional officer pay bans were actually created in 1971 through OPM, and they haven't been changed since then. So correctional officers go up to a GS-8. Other federal agencies, which have the same type of duties, they're 11s, they're GS-12s. So that even the pay gap within the federal government itself is pretty significant.
And so when you, when those issues are raised, what's, I realize you probably get a variety of responses, but, is it we're working on it, we're not working on it, or we don't care?
Actually, it's kind of just flat out, that's not my job. They lowered our staffing complement down to 137 from 161, like the mathematical formula equates to. And when we bring that up and we ask about that, it's essentially, well, we don't make those determinations at the local level. Okay, who does? And then we contact the regional office, and it's, well, we don't make those determinations at the regional office. So we contact central office, and it's, hey, who's in charge of this? And nobody seems to know. It's in their policy. If I violate policy, I have a case on me for employee conduct. But who's holding the agency accountable for violating their own policy? And so when we try to speak with any congressional representatives or try to bring attention to the matter, the agency is standing back and they're going, oh, hey, we're staffed at this percentage. It's like, based on what? If you change what 100 means, you can make it look like whatever you want it to look like.
Right.
Yeah, sure. If you include everybody in the staffing complement that looks like people who are directly overseeing inmates, then it looks like they're fine.
But that's the other thing that the agency does. Is so they have what is called correctional services, which is what correctional officers fall under. But also included in that are your special investigative services, is your lieutenants, are your the captain's secretary, the captain. There's multiple other areas of the institution that are included in correctional services that aren't correctional officers, but they count them as a whole. So when you look at it, if there's 10 functions inside correctional services and 9 of them are staffed at 100%, the one that's staffed at 50% isn't going to be at 50 when you're averaging it out. So it shows us that closer to 75-80% staffed.
Well,
how much of this do you credit to the implementation of the First Step Act? I mean, it sounds like that was kind of a failure.
The First Step Act was a failure in implementation in the agency. Unfortunately, it took several years for them to even react to it. It's not because of the First Step Act. It's that it has been a long time coming. The First Step Act was just another weight on top of the shoulders of the staff members, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like that was what caused this. This was all way back before then. 2016 is when it started. A previous regional director had actually made the comment that it's cheaper to pay overtime than it is to hire staff. And so that was what started the trend initially with that.
But specifically on the First Step Act, I did ask the question. I brought up the fact that people in these other disciplines are not being able to do their jobs. So what does that mean? And I was told that not having enough time is no excuse for not getting your job done.
Well, of course not.
Reality has nothing to do with your issue, sir. Wow.
Right.
Huh.
And then, it was brought up that you could be sued, the inmates could sue you personally if you don't have enough time to do your job.
Really?
Yep.
Back to Pelican Bay. I remember they were in the middle of a big lawsuit because some guy got a broken cookie in his lunch, and he had way too much time in the law library, so he was suing them over his broken cookie. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised at what they could sue you for, but What can they sue you for?
Well, when you start talking about, specifically what he's talking about is case managers. They are responsible for calculations and computating release dates. Things that actually affect the release date, I should say.
Okay.
So if they're not able to be in there to do that job correctly and to run those numbers, the calculations aren't going to be correct, right? So that's what they're getting at is, you guys are responsible for this. This is your job to do this. It's like, well, great. Well, you hired me to do a 40-hour-a-week job, but you're only giving me 20 hours.
Specifically, the act that was mentioned is called the Bivens Act, and it provides the inmates the statutory right to sue and recover damages from federal officials for violations of their constitutional rights. That's what he's talking about, but... You know, it's like they're leaving the staff out, hanging them out to dry. They're not covered, even though they don't have the time to do their job. They're just putting it on the staff member.
Well, if you're supposed to be monitoring 128 people, I would imagine it would be relatively unsafe for you to be sitting in a corner with a pen and a paper calculating everyone's release date.
And that's kind of the thing they're doing, too. So they're pulling these people out of their normal jobs. They're putting in the correctional officer post. And more often than not, they're being put in a housing unit that's adjacent to where they're working, where their normal work is. And so they're actually doing two jobs at one time, which obviously if you're doing jobs at the computer, calculating, running numbers, figuring those things out, you're probably not as attentive and doing, you know, inspections and searches and doing rounds and those types of things that correctional officers are generally able to do without having the other tasks of a case manager or a counselor having those things packed on top.
I can't even imagine how you could keep track of people with all of the, I mean, anybody who's even watched a movie that had a prison in it knows that there's tons of shenanigans go on in prison. I don't imagine your facility is any different. So you have all of that. I would think you would have to really, you'd have to have eyes in the back of your head. You should be paying attention all the time. I would think that would be safer for you and everyone else.
Yeah, it's ideal.
Yeah.
There was actually in the 2023, the funding bill, there's actually language in there from Congress to the agency. But it's pretty specific, and it says the Bureau of Prisons is directed to ensure that non-custody correctional employees spend 90% of their work week in their primary positions. And that was something that Congress put in the last funding bill. And the agency, I would say, as a whole, this facility maybe more so, hasn't been following that. They plan to follow that. We've asked them about it. So they're awaiting guidance from the agency. So part of us reaching out to congressional members is like, hey, you guys directed our agency to do this, and they're not. Something has to be done, whether it's funding to be able to compete in the economy, to hire staff. Something has to happen. We don't have anywhere to put the excess inmates that we don't have beds for. We're stretched out. And unfortunately, rather than working with local union labor, the labor unions, management are taking actions kind of into their own hands. They're setting up schedules. So here, for example, we had a schedule where we were doing 12-hour shifts with three on and 3 days on, 4 days off, 4 days on, 3 days off, giving staff a little bit of a break, you know, to enjoy their families and their personal lives. And the agency is unilaterally implementing a schedule next quarter where they're assigning 4 12-hour shifts to all officers.
Oh, that'll make everybody, that'll really help everything. Guys, I hate to say it, but we're at the top of the hour here. We've got to take a really quick break for news. We're going to come right back, and we'll pick up right where we left off. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I don't know when I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antonio.
and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They've got everything you need in the way of John Deere. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. They got mowers, tractors, attachments, you name it. They've got it in stock right now, ready for spring. So it's right around the corner. The grass is starting to grow. We're sitting at about 75 degrees here in Redding today in middle of February. Yeah, it's pretty darn nice. So don't get caught short. Go up and see them and be prepared for spring. You can give them a call at 530-226-9226 or go online and check out all their products there. You can also, on that site, you can actually go to the tab. It says Build Your Own. You can outfit your own tractor and see what kind of dollars you're talking about. It's a great site. And that's papemachinery.com.
Just to be the weather girl, it's only 69 out.
Oh, it's 69?
So put your swimming suit away.
Wait, with the wind chill, it's 75. Is that how that works?
What are you, my roommate from college? With the windshield factor?
That's the windshield factor, yeah.
Yeah, the old windshield factor. I'm like, okay, that's not what that is. All right, we're going back to prison. Back to prison with Josh and Lanny. All right, guys. So I have posted your Council of Prisons local number 33, which is your western region there. It was a letter from December 17th. I mean, just the beginning. The Western Region facilities are in a crisis with staffing that's directly affecting the welfare of all correctional staff. That's your opening line. Fairly direct.
Right.
I'm not going to read the whole thing, obviously, but just out of curiosity, with an opener like that, did you get a response?
No, there was no response that was put out, at least not one to all staff, anyways. If you read back on there, it talks about the hiring freeze in 2021.
Yep.
It's basically asking to be able to hire staff in order to compete with the areas and attract quality applicants. And obviously nothing has changed. We've actually gotten quite a bit worse since then.
Since 2021. And I did post that on the site for today. So I forgot to say today is actually the 12th of February, 2023, just in case we replay this, because I think we will. So if somebody wants to go on there and look.
I was actually incorrect also earlier when I said the agency was about 7,000 inmates over population. We were actually closer to 25,000.
Oh, it's kind of like immigration numbers.
Right.
Immigration math.
It's kind of the thing that they're not taking into the facility's actual structural capabilities, and they're not sound facilities that we're being housed in with water running down the walls every time it rains.
Well, see,
if it has a bed and a roof, essentially you're getting an inmate in it.
Well, okay, so I think people routinely believe that when you go to federal prison, everybody's sitting around and, you know, eating bonbons in a fancy cell with a nice TV and kind of kicking back doing nothing. I don't think, here's your trash bag and your tape. Let's make sure and funnel that water away from your bed. I don't think
right.
Most people would see that.
And that's the other side of it is, you know, they're humans. We're humans. We're still just people, essentially, and they're people, and those aren't ideal conditions for anybody to be living in and stuck inside of a cell, you know, during periods of the night where you're up trying to divert water down your wall to hopefully make it into your sink drain, you know.
That's ridiculous. I'll put on my little tinfoil hat. How has lack of access due to the COVID shutdowns furthered this? Because I'm guessing keeping everyone out may have made that a little easier to pull off stuff like that with nobody seeing it?
COVID was really great for the agency to claim as a reasoning for things.
Mm-hmm.
This was all existing before COVID.
Right.
COVID didn't cause any of this.
No. But easier to hide.
Right, and that's what they've used it as, exactly that, is that oh, you know, we had COVID, and we were still hiring during COVID. It wasn't like we were on a freeze. It was just, they're using COVID to say, like, oh, that's why our staffing's low. And it's not. We were just way before COVID.
Sure. Well, when I popped on last night to get a picture to post on the site, it still had a big red thing across the front that, you know, nobody can go in and visitors, blah, 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 COVID, blah, blah, blah. Is that still the thing?
No, they're actually having visiting.
Okay.
That's actually incorrect.
Okay. I was curious about that because I thought, gee, how long are we going to drag this out? But, you know, other places are dragging it out, so who knows? It has to be just incredibly difficult from on the staff. It's not a great. I mean, it's not a happy job to start with. You know, it's a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, a lot of negativity, and then you're treated like crap by your own agency, who doesn't seem to care if you actually get to sleep or any of those things. How's
right,
that?
That's the thing, that we're all hired here on a 5-day schedule, just like any, you know, normal job is. And over the years, as it's gotten worse and they've adjusted scheduling, they've done it unilaterally. They haven't done it with the bargaining unit, which is actually a law, 5 U.S.C. 6130, actually says that they cannot put us on a compressed work schedule without negotiations with the union. And they've done that unilaterally, and like I was talking about before the break, they're going to this 4-12 schedule, which is stretching the officers even thinner. So you're going from having a 3-day week and a 4-day week to now every week is a 4-day week. So you're basically telling them, hey, one more day a week, I need you to come in here, away from your families, away from whatever personal life things you have going on, and come in for an extra day. And we already have a hard time keeping staff. Stretching them thinner is not the answer, you know, and it's not ideal when you have staff members with children who can't coach their kids Little League, who can't coach their kids basketball, those things that normal people in normal working conditions would take for granted. I mean, those are things that we aren't able to do. We don't have that opportunity to do those things. And it's because of the choices the agency has made and the ones that they've made along the way. And unfortunately, they're going in a step that's just pulling us thinner. And there's a process for us to fight those actions, but those processes are long, they're legal, you know, they're drawn out. And it's not, other than getting the public and staff member families and MA families to call their local representatives and maybe get some oversight of the agency to make these changes, to make it so officers can compete financially, you have, I believe, over 60% of our staff, I believe, aren't even off probation as correctional officers at our facility.
Wait, say that again? What?
I believe the last time that I looked at our staffing numbers for correctional officers, it was 60% were not off of probation.
So they're that new. How long does probation last?
A year.
Wow.
And there's that huge gap. And I might just put it out there. I might be stating those numbers incorrectly. Last time I looked at them.
But it's high. I mean, that's a lot. If it's more than...
It is high.
I would say if it's more than 25%, that's kind of a crisis.
It is a crisis. We've been in a crisis for years. We have a huge gap between the senior staff who have been... the staff that have been here for over 10 years. And then there's a huge gap. There's, you know, a handful of people that have been here around 5 years, and then there's just another huge gap, and then you have all these new staff, and we are hiring staff, but we can't get anybody to stay here. So, you know, we might hire 50 staff in last year, say, but they lost like 65 staff.
Oh.
So it's, even with the hiring, you can't keep them because we can't compete economically. We can't compete with family life and home life. We can't compete with anybody.
Sure.
Actually. So it's...
They get hired there, and they immediately start looking for something that, you know, like better hours, better pay, like fewer criminals. Yeah.
Right. And all the 12-hour shifts, they turn into 16-hour shifts, you know, like we were talking about. So.
Yeah, how does that even... How can you even do that on a long you know, on an ongoing basis. Okay, so for those of us who don't work in a union, never did, maybe, again, there are a lot of misconceptions about all sorts of things. This show is really, like, fraught with misconception. So I think most people think, like, the unions run everything, and they dictate, and they're, you know, swinging the big stick, and they, you know, they're bossing everybody around. But your union is not able to get over the bar with these guys. I mean, they've got you at bay.
Right, and that's not just that's the agency as a whole.
Sure.
And it's unfortunate.
No slight against your particular union, but I just mean, like, the union concept that represents you, you would think that that would be how you could rectify this, but...
Right, and that's what I was getting at, is the union as a whole, even for the Council of Prison Locals, is continually battling the agency, you know, nationwide, and unfortunately it is nationwide. The West Coast seems to be hit quite a bit harder than most places, and I believe we are the worst off of any of the facilities. But I guess the eye-opening point is that when we talk to other outside agencies like the Federal Labor Relations Authority, sorry, FLRA,
mm-hmm.
Even their experience with the Bureau of Prisons is that they'll say when other agencies and other unions file a charge that there was an unfair labor practice, and we bring that charge up and we say, yes, there was a violation, that most agencies will just, you know, stop the act and they'll say, hey, we're sorry, and they'll correct it. So the Bureau of Prisons is the only one that will drag it out. Doesn't matter what it is. They just go all the way. They take it and they fight it. And they're... is a difference between our agency and typical federal agencies, and I'm not sure what that is. I'm not sure what causes it. But outside agencies interacting with our agency even notice that, and they're very vocal about it, too.
Wow. So after having dealt with Bureau of Prisons, see, Lanny, what was it, 2001 that you started with this?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Was it like this back then?
No, it was not like this at all. It's been declining over the years to where it is. It's evolved to where we are today.
Wow. Just out of curiosity, since you have such a long history in that system, was there any kind of tipping point, or was this just a thing that was kind of mismanaged, and like all mismanagement, it just continues to slide until it hits a crisis point?
Yeah, I wouldn't even say there, like you said, there wasn't a tipping point. It's gradually it became this way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you have a lot of people that are eligible to retire soon, and, no amount of money is going to make, these staff members stay with the conditions that we're currently in.
Sure. I mean, we see this with police on the street. You see it with highway cops, sheriffs. You see it everywhere, law enforcement in general. I mean, they're, you know, obviously the defund the police, blah, 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 all that from the last few years has just turned out to be a terrible thing for our law enforcement folks. And I can't imagine it's helped you at all.
I would say that, you know, when I began... there was a lot of pride in this job, and there was a lot of pride within the staff.
Sure.
And when I walk and I see staff, they look like they're broken. They're tired. They're tired of working all these – the officers are tired of working all these long hours. That's the biggest difference from when I started and now. The staff are just worn down.
And
that poses several – you know, when they're in a unit and they're not as cognizant as they should be because they're tired – what things could happen at that point, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. When you lose the morale of everybody you're working with, it just becomes more and more dangerous. And I can just imagine looking around and seeing, you know, everybody drawn down like that.
It's like a pirate ship.
Yeah.
The beatings will continue till the morale improves.
Yeah. It's,
Yeah,
exactly.
Not exactly. Not exactly a winning strategy. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll come right back and pick up on the pirate ship when we return. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. That's what I think of with prison.
Yeah.
Angry eyes.
You know, speaking of that, I'm kind of curious.
The angry eyes or the prison?
The prison.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't want to get off topic too much here, but I'm kind of curious. You know, you have your security inside the prison. Do they have anything that patrols, like, the outside perimeter of the prison to kind of keep people from – I mean, we worked – next door to a county yard work facility, and we watched people drive by all the time throwing stuff over the fence. It was a joke. But do you folks have like an outside perimeter patrol that kind of protects you from that?
So those are all dictated by the security levels of each institution. We have had items thrown over the fence. We've had drone drops.
Oh, no kidding.
Then, yeah, we've had multiple incidents of those, and if you look this place up on a map, we're kind of out in the middle of a desert area. There's a lot of, I believe it's BLM and Army land adjacent to us. There's a Army depot right next door. It's a real open area out here.
Right. So it's not real easy to approach and not be seen.
Well, there's two, they're public roads, so there's actually two public roads that run parallel on each side of the institution.
Oh.
Of its property. There is a little bit of a gap, but those are just things that were everywhere. They're all just set by the security level of the institution, whatever that may be. Hmm. But when you were talking about earlier, and you're asking about a tipping point, what was causing it, there is something that I think has been kind of affecting that with our agency in particular, is that when I started in 2010, when I was going through the academy training course down in Glencoe, they were very vocal, very big on, if you are willing to travel, you will get promoted. And that's something that has always plagued our institution, is that we are having executive staff, we're having wardens, associate wardens. They're all coming in here, and they can have the best intentions when they get here, but they're all gone within a year. So they're all making these changes, and they're all implementing moves. They're implementing rosters, things that they're looking at, making short-term fixes rather than long-term adjustments, you know. And it's I don't want to say that it's what's going to make it look best while I'm here so I can get out of here. But
that is it. I mean, obviously.
It essentially is kind of what it seems it boils down to, and it's not that they're putting the institution on a track to recover and be, you know, still functional in 10 years.
The wardens and the administration that come through here have no ownership of this institution, while you got staff that are, local people that have been here become staff members. These wardens and administrators are in and they're out. So by the time an issue that they've created is, when it comes time to get it fixed, they're already gone.
Mm. Dang. Well, you have all these people that are kind of coming in, going out. You have need of personnel, but do they? So I know that there, you know, we've talked about how the numbers are being cooked and all that, but currently, if you had 50 guys, say, that wanted to apply, could they do that? Are the openings actually listed as open? Or are they saying
they
you're
are,
fully staffed?
On USA Jobs, people go on there, usajobs.gov, they look under correctional officer. They are listed on there. It's a continuously open position.
Okay.
So it's always open. The problem is that process can take anywhere from 3 to 4 months.
Ew.
From you applying to you walking in the door. So it's who's waiting around for up to 4 months,
yeah,
for a job that's going to pay $6 an hour or less.
So that's a big difference between when I started also. I went and applied, and literally I was working within 10 days.
Oh.
So
good thinking.
That's a huge difference.
Well, you have the state facility there that Governor Newsom keeps talking about closing. Will you get any staff from that? Or is that just totally
very
different?
Likely just the – well, you have two different things. You have the age restriction, so you have to be under 37 to be able to apply here.
Really?
Just due to – otherwise you can't get law enforcement retirement, so it's a requirement that you have to be under 37 the way the federal law enforcement retirement works. But on top of that, starting out from there to starting here is about a $30,000 difference a year.
Cut.
So, right. Just to put it in perspective, we make about $30,000 less here than they're making over there.
What the hell?
Wow.
And what kind of sketch their facility for people? Who are they guarding, and what are those folks doing? I mean, I know it's state, but
right. So the CCC, the one that was closing, I believe, was a level 3 yard. It's a medium, also. And then they have High Desert, which is right next door, which is a level 4 yard. And that's, I mean, we all have neighbors. We all know each other here in the area.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, some of those people have had to move, and those actions of government, again, have taken the fire camp away from this area, which is here right on the edge of the wilderness, you know.
Yeah, and you know, I'll link that program, because we did a program with one of the wardens up there about that. Learned a lot about the fire camp and how that works and the whole rehabilitative effort with that. It was pretty interesting, actually. It was a lot of stuff we didn't know. But I was kind of thinking maybe you get guys. But yeah, $30,000 pay cut to go work 16 hours a day in a system, you know, back to the trash bags and the tape.
So,
right, and then, so of course, they're right outside of town there, so their commute is, you know, 5 minutes instead of 45 minutes.
Right. So you folks don't have a fire program, is that right?
No.
Okay. So that's some training that wouldn't be available to your inmates.
Wow. So the other, I'm sure you talk to people around the country, and this sounds like it's a system-wide situation, not obviously just your facility. What are you hearing from other places, besides, you know, that might be different than this?
Just more of the same, really.
Okay.
There are some institutions back east that have more staff. They're not as stretched as thin as we are. But for the most part, everywhere's a little bit low. I don't think anywhere's quite as low as we are. One of the things you were talking about, though, is about unions in particular.
Yes.
Some of the things that make us different is we, federal employees, you can't, we have a lot of laws that affect us differently than other unions do. So we don't have the ability to strike. We can't negotiate pay and benefits. We don't have any of those negotiations and those tactics that a lot of the other unions that you're probably used to hearing about or seeing how they're dealing with things. We can't do those. We have no say what the agency or the federal government pays correctional officers. All we can do is try to reach out to congressional leaders and ask them to make change. And we're trying to bring awareness and let people understand this $30,000 difference for the exact same job is hard to compete with.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier they shut down the private prisons. So there are no more private prisons in California?
It's actually nationwide. So that was one of the, I believe it was it part of the First Step Act? I believe it was either a part of or it was tied in with the First Step Act. That they shut down the private prison system, and the federal government took over those detainees and those inmates. And unfortunately, it's just put us over population, and it's caused measures throughout the agency that said if it has a roof and a bed, you're getting an inmate in it.
Right.
And it doesn't matter necessarily the condition of that, or whether it's a gymnasium or a tent on a rec yard. If it has a roof and a bed, you're getting an inmate.
So when they shut down the private facilities, did they make any compensations as far as pay and staffing and all that to compensate for the influx?
No, there's been no change. Like I said, correctional officer pay bands are laid out on OPM, and those haven't been adjusted or changed since 1971.
Mm.
God.
Wow.
I don't understand. Okay. So this makes no sense how in an age when we have so, we used to send, I guess in my lifetime, we sent a lot of people to prison. We stopped sending a lot of people to prison. We sent a lot, it's fluctuated over time. But right now, the only people we're really keeping in prison are the really bad ones. And the only thing between those people and the rest of us is you guys. And you're kind of being treated as expendable. Is that kind of the long and short of it?
Yeah, exactly. That's why we are trying to, make the public aware.
Yeah.
We put up some semi-controversial signs. We're trying to get an online presence. We're trying to make the public aware because essentially they're just not aware.
No, and that's the thing.
The agency obviously isn't putting anything out. The agency's not exposing these problems. It's up to us to expose them, and we're trying to get Congress. Everything's federal. So unlike the state where, changes can happen quickly, we have to have legislative leaders who are going to write bills, bring the bills up for vote, and be passed into law to really make changes. And until those happen, we're kind of, dead in the water, just floating down the creek.
What has happened with this, legislatively, obviously, over the years? It comes up, it just, the bills languish, they die? Is there any kind of, is there opposition or just inaction?
Mostly inaction. I've seen a few bills that have been put together. Most recently, last year, was a bill, I believe it was the short title was Pay Our Federal Correctional Officers Fairly Act, but it never made it to the floor before the new Congress came in, and what that would have done was allowed government federal correctional officers who are within a 100-mile radius of a pay locality to be included on that pay locality. Because, like, up here, we're just covered under RUS, which is rest of the United States pay. So, if we were on Sacramento's locality pay, we would be it's another 11.5%.
Because
those are the kinds of things that
explain that. How does that work?
So, in federal pay, you have the federal pay charts. You go onto OPM and look up pay. You'll see it on there. It's OPM.gov. And on the pay charts, every area, so they have localities that are essentially like a cost of living allowance, like a COLA.
Okay.
For people who are familiar with military. So those areas, like Sacramento, cost more to live there than it does in general rural areas. But up here, everything costs the same as it does in Sacramento.
Of course it does. Yeah.
Right. So
and then you get to drive more, and, with the sweet price of gas, that's obviously been an incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually looked up the housing, the median house cost of housing in Sacramento versus Reno. Reno's medium house was $60,000 more than in Sacramento. But we're getting paid less than them.
Yeah, so yeah, you should make at least what they're making.
Should.
And have a cost of living adjustment for the price according to Reno.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you look at it and you think, well, okay, maybe the, you know, you're understaffed, the hours are long, this and that, but you're being really well paid. But it's kind of like, even that's not.
But you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
The housing is so expensive that the newer officers coming on, they won't be able to live in this area. That's why a lot of them transfer or quit. They just don't make enough money.
Are do they start? I don't know how I want to. I mean, are they folks that actually come from that area? Not necessarily were, you know, kids there, but do they live there or do they move there for the job and then realize, like,
it's both. And it's almost at a point where you're getting a little bit worried that we've almost exhausted all the, you know, people that are local to the area.
Yeah.
Because we've run through so many. But it is both. We do have people that come here for the job, and they move into the area. And it's like any other job, though. You know, if you're being treated good and you're getting paid good, it's hard to leave that.
Sure.
And we've had staff that have come all the way from Hawaii to get this job, to work here. And their whole plan was to be here for a year, and they've stayed for three. You know, they stayed longer until their family didn't want to do that anymore. So it is a factor. And we do have both in those situations, but when we're just running through staff, those are kind of the incidentals that are.
Yeah, you've
not
only
quite
got
as important as, you know, to receive.
Yeah, your local population up there. I mean, you're going to go through that pretty quick. I mean, I've heard that in other industries where you run out of potential hirees in a small area or a rural area, and you end up rehiring folks that didn't work out the first time around. Do you guys see much of that?
I have seen people leave and reapply. I haven't seen too many reapply and stay. I've seen people come back. They've worked for a little while and then left again. Because even they, when they came back, it was worse than it was before. So,
well, and under the kind of hours, you know, you're in a one guy for, you know, 128 people. You've got to really count on the other people that you work with, and it would certainly be helpful if you had a really cohesive staff who, you know, had some longevity together and wasn't dog tired. I mean, all those things just add up to disaster. I don't know. Kind of, I guess you guys probably go to work like every other day. You're kind of used to it, but I don't know. I feel like I need to hold my breath for you.
That's kind of the thing with us trying to bring attention to it. It's not just us and our families. It's the community.
Sure.
It's the inmates that are confined here. It's their families, you know, and their visiting is getting canceled. It's their family members that aren't getting the recreational time. It's their families that aren't getting the educational classes that they're supposed to be getting. So
that's true. They're not leaving the facility in the condition that they, you know, if in fact they wanted to be a productive citizen, they're getting shorted on that too. We have to hang on to that idea, and we'll come right back. And finish that thought. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Now on the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad. 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 Bad to the bone.
If we catch a criminal, when we catch a criminal, it's nothing we can do but play cops and robbers, cops and robbers.
All right, you guys. What have we not covered?
Well, we were talking about the effect of all this on the families and the support folks up there.
Yeah.
How all this is affecting them as well. It's that's something I think that isn't really taken into consideration.
Those stressors on the family, there's a reason why some staff are actually quitting.
Yeah.
You know, it's affecting their home life.
Sure.
You know, another thing I wanted to touch on was these officers, say they're working a 16-hour day and they got an hour drive to work and from work. Day after day after day, they're on the road driving here. I think that's like it's a danger to the people that are driving on the highway, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, for one of them falls asleep at the wheel. And
right.
Yeah, no
just
kidding.
None of that is a recipe for, of all the jobs out there, there's a lot of stuff where you really have to be on your toes. But I think your job, you got to really be on your toes.
Well, you have to attempt to make it a decent work environment. I don't care where you're at.
Yeah. I would imagine you guys, do your... I would imagine you do your best, but it's amazing to me, though, that the management... What kind of interaction do they have with all this? Any? None?
It's hit or miss, actually. We've had pretty good relationships with a few of them. Some of them have came in and been very dismissive. Some of them have worked with us until they found out they were leaving and then didn't want to work with us anymore.
Oh.
But that's the whole thing. None of them are invested here. None of them are planning to stay here. This is a stepping stone, It's just, let me get my associate warden or let me get my warden so I can get my SES. And
senior executive service, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, 125% of GS-15 pay.
Wow.
To them, that's a big deal, and the motives and the motivation to do certain things, start to get a little bit convoluted. And
yeah, the focus
the
goes away.
They can promote throughout this agency.
Well, okay, so let's do what you can't do. Let's be king for the day, right? So if you guys got to kind of rewrite it, I realize it. The list would be fairly long, but if it was yours to fix, where would you start? What would be your concrete things that you would do right out of the box?
Increase correctional officer pay to be compatible with the economy.
Okay. Seems like not really a big lift, but I get that it is.
It is just because it's, federal and has to go through Congress.
Right. So
well, I would think that increasing the staff just to make your job safer would be pretty high on the list too, wouldn't it?
Right, but that's the double-edged sword is how do you get 50 correctional officers in here?
Yep.
On one day. You can't do that unless you can retain them in the economy.
Right. Back to that again. It really does all start with the pay.
It does, yeah, and it's unfortunately if you start talking about pay and everybody gets all you just want more money. Look at the situation we're in.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and I think maybe Josh, you had told me before, if you work at are you telling me like Home Depot or something in Reno, like the pay compared to where you guys are? You had given me some example a while back, and I thought, what the heck?
So in Reno, Reno's a very booming economy over there. They're still growing. They're building houses everywhere. They have a lot of the tech companies that are coming out there. A lot of the, Uline is over there. They're a real big one. A lot of warehouses over there. They are all paying more than what we are paying. And there's no drive. There's no commute. They have retirements the same as we do. They're paying benefits. They're paying them sign-on bonuses. How do we compete with that? And unfortunately, is the congressional leadership isn't aware of these things, and it's hard to break it down for them because they have no understanding of how the prison system works. They have no understanding of what we're dealing with. And those are the things that hopefully we can get out there to people. If you have family members in prison as inmates, contact your local representatives, ask them to get a little bit of oversight, ask them to get involved in the prison system.
And that's pretty much true with any industry. If your top level management is not tuned in with what the local economy is doing and what local pay is doing, you're going to lose people. I mean, it's just that simple. People go to work for a paycheck, and it's
right.
Nice if you could incorporate the fact they like what they do. But bottom line is, they're there to make money and provide for their family, and
better hours, closer to home, more money, all that.
Yeah, I mean, I had an employee come to me one time and said, "Hey, I can make more money at McDonald's than here." And you start looking around, and it's like, yeah, you can. We need to fix that. And if you don't, you're going to constantly, you know, it's going to be a revolving door, just like what you're talking about. You're going to end up bringing people in. You know, they're going to realize it's not a great work environment, and the pay isn't all that great. I mean, what's the upside? So you start losing folks, and so, you know, that is an important part of the equation is compensation.
Yeah,
right. And that's the new director that was appointed last year when. She first came in to the director's seat. She was talking about fixing and staff exhaustion. Those were the biggest issues to her and that she had heard. And one of her very first acts was to hire 40 additional investigative staff. It's like she's talking about staff exhaustion, but she's first act was to hire investigative staff. And if you have quality staff and you have staffing at the proper rate, you don't have staffing problems, you know, because you have good staff to keep the questionable ones in mind, you know, and out them.
What does investigative staff do? What does that mean? Like, what is that job?
The people that are processing staff investigations, like if an inmate makes an accusation that a staff member violated, you know,
Oh, investigating you guys, not the prisoners?
Correct.
Wow.
Okay. Wow, I thought I was missing something there. Okay, no. Huh.
And that's the thing is that we've had staff members who unfortunately were given cases for things that are, I mean, not even controversial. They're just petty to begin with. We've had one that had a case put on him for smiling while he was on the special housing unit range, you know, where inmates are locked down. And he smiled at an inmate and they may file them, and they opened up an investigation case on them.
So I've seen staff members take cases for actually following policy.
How do you even defend yourself on a deal like that? Is it just a paper pain in the ass goes in your file, or is that a problem?
Most of it's just a process, and it's just a nuisance for the staff member, but it's. Those are things that they contact their representative. We have to go in while they're giving testimonies and statements, and it's
more time wasted.
It's just a waste of time, and it's
smiling.
But devoting staff members, and they drag them out for years and years too. So it's not like a week long and it's done. We have ones, and we've actually had memorandums from previous directors that said, "Hey, these have to be done within 180 days." And it'll take them, you know, 3-4 years. Staff members still have cases on them for stuff that's ridiculous from 4 years ago. And you have that hanging over your head as a staff member.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the broken cookie case, I remember, went on forever. We actually really thought they were kidding. They super weren't kidding. That was a thing. I guess after that, I was like, I guess I believe anything.
Yeah, hiring internal affairs, basically, personnel.
40 of them?
Yeah, that really doesn't solve anything,
No.
As far as the ongoing issue.
Well, that basically just told you guys you were super expendable and that the food chain was opposite of what you thought.
Right, and that's exactly what the message was to staff. And unfortunately, the way that it was presented initially when the director was appointed was that they were pro staff, and they were going to work on staff exhaustion and the staffing numbers and these things, and just the agency in general. The things that they spend money on, that they could be using to ask Congress for money to be able to use those funds for staffing, you know, to increase retentions or to increase hiring incentives. And they've spent millions of dollars over the last 3 years paying a third-party company to do a national bed book audit, which is walk out and count how many beds you have in your housing units, you know.
Like,
why are we paying a company to do that? I just told you there's 128 beds in every housing unit. We have 12 housing units.
Do the math.
End of investigation.
Get a pencil.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, again, that's just typical bureaucracy that, you know, I think
you're always going to have that.
To justify their job.
Man.
That's crazy.
That is super crazy. Okay, so what's something nobody would guess? Like, something that you guys see all the time that people would be like, what? That goes on there? Nothing, you know, personal or weird or anything, but, like, what are things people don't consider? Pretty much everything.
pretty much things you can't mention.
Sorry, I can hear your head smoking over there.
I mean, there's things that happen every day that you're just at a loss for, you know. And there's, I mean, that's both with the population that we house, and it's with staff, and it's with management. There's things every day that make you go, huh?
How long are these people there? Like, when you're in a, I obviously it's all sentencing and whatnot, but I mean, have you seen some of these people for, you know, a decade, or are they in and out, or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have, inmates that are serving life sentences. We have inmates that are here for a month.
Right.
Everything in between.
Oh.
There's a, yeah, it's literally everything in between. I was talking about with the management variables and,
yeah,
the security system or the security levels, everything kind of gets pushed around. It's all a numbers game.
Yeah. I would imagine the lifers are the ones you got to watch out for, because they really have nothing to lose. They're going to be there anyway. So I would imagine their attitude, although maybe they look at it like, I'm going to be here forever, I might as well learn to get along. Is that the case?
I would say both, actually. Some of them, you know, they're... You got to figure, if you're here for a long time, you want a mellow time, right? So
yeah,
you're going to kind of keep the young guys in line. And unfortunately, the issues that we have with staffing, and you got to close recreation, and you got to close these educational programs, closing all these things, puts them into the housing unit more, and it puts them in their cells more. Which,
right.
Everybody's in closer contact, more pressure.
Oh, yeah. Lets them sit and stew and just...
cook up stuff.
Yeah. Think.
Right.
Dang.
So it's, staffing is like a multifaceted issue that affects not just us. It affects the inmates. It affects our families. It affects the inmate families.
Oh, yeah.
It affects everybody, the community around us. And
well, that's the linchpin of the whole thing, because you guys, I mean, it's you know, you're the lock on the door. So... you know, if that's not in good shape, everything is kind of up for grabs.
Right.
Man. Just as taxpayers, we're sorry you're doing this. We're sorry you have to deal with this, because that is crazy.
Well, on top of everything you need to, I mean, just your day-to-day duties with your job, it's not an easy job to start with.
No.
But then when you have to deal with, you know, the bureaucracy kind of keeping their thumb on everything and just making your job even tougher, I mean, it's so unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, just with a few changes, I mean, it would
yeah.
just make life
wouldn't,
so
wouldn't
much
take
easier.
A genius to make a change there. Fellas, thank you for your military service, for starters. Thank you for keeping us safe from all the people that you deal with every day. And we hope people will send this show out. It'll be commercial-free this afternoon. You'll be able to send the link out and inform your friends and family and other people, because it's about time we got smart about this. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
And thanks for coming on.
I am sure we will talk to you soon. You've been listening to We the People, and you can find us at We the People Radio. For good.